One of Donald Trump's key campaign promises was to deport all immigrants who are in this country illegally. While the focus of the immigration fight has been in big cities like New York and Los Angeles and some of the communities of the Southwest, there's been far less attention paid to how an increase in deportations would affect agriculture in the Northeast, especially on the organic and small farms that have become the cornerstones of a vibrant farm-to-table movement. Michael Frank investigated how farms in upstate New York are coping with the new set of immigration protocols for an article in The Atlantic called "Can America's Farms Survive the Threat of Deportations?" And I'm pleased to welcome him back to our show now, along with Michael Hurwitz, a director at New York City Green Market, and Zaid, one of the organic farmers who supplies food to New York City Green Markets. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
And how are we going to resolve the problem of Michael and Michael? I'm going to have to call you by both names, each of you?
I could be Michael Frank or just Frank.
Okay. Well, Michael Frank, broadly speaking, what did you find when you spoke to farmers and farm workers in upstate New York?
I sort of came about this story a little obliquely. I just, like a lot of people in my community, didn't really realize that this is going on. And after Trump was, actually even after he was elected, you could tell everything had shifted. There was this palpable fear. And because of that, I really felt like I needed to report on this. And the more I talked to both farmers and farm workers, I felt this fear was only getting stronger. And people were completely changing their behaviors.
Michael Hurwitz, when you speak to farmers, are you hearing similar stories?
Well, there has been a labor shortage in the state of New York for at least the last 10 years. So pressures on farm labor are not new to our community. What is new, I think, is a heightened awareness of the plight of the undocumented worker and the pressures that they are facing, particularly around deportations now. And what that's done is allowed us to mobilize and educate around an issue that those workers have been facing long before Donald Trump arrived to office.
Zaid, have the changes in immigration policies affected you personally or your business?
Yes, they have, probably mostly psychologically for this year anyway, because the whole system is actually so messed up that you don't know from year to year what's going to happen. So my immediate reaction this year after hearing all the political rhetoric is I'm going to be up a creek because we don't want immigrants anymore in this country and so on and so forth, even though I use the H-2A program, which is the only legal program to bring in folks from other countries that have the skills we need.
But not every farmer does that.
No, it's a very expensive program, and it's also, you know, bureaucratically challenging, so it's something that few farmers use. But it's going to become the bedrock if the supply of laborers disappear, and that's what's happening.
I will add that our farming community heavily relies on the H-2A program, farmers that are selling at the market.
And every farmer I talk to, even if they're using undocumented workers, they're using H-2A as well, because in some sense, you can't just do one or the other. It's just impossible.
Well, what are the H-2 visas? They're intended to bring farm workers in during the harvest season?
Yeah, it's a broken program all the way back to the Second World War. I quote one farmer who I called Sam for the story, who said that his family, the farm's been in his family since the 1850s, and his family has used it, what came before it in the Second World War, because there's no other way to do this consistently. The problem is that it's not consistent. Oftentimes, you don't get the workers you want.
And why is it such a challenge to use, Zaid?
The program in and of itself goes through many different agencies, starting with the New York State Department of Labor, local folks, the U.S. Department of Labor, INS, and then the U.S. embassies in the various countries where you recruit people from. So that process is very cumbersome. And either you hire a lawyer to do it, which is expensive, you know, and that's usually, there's firms that deal with that. But in my case, due to my background, I do it myself. And I'm the only farmer in this country that recruits people from Egypt because they're very highly skilled organic farmers themselves.
What did you say, your background, because of your Egyptian background, or do you have a background in law?
know my background as an educator for Cornell Cooperative Extension, as well as working for USDA, as well as just doing this for the last 10 years and having friends in various departments of labor that have helped me through the process.
Michael Frank, weren't farmers hesitant to criticize the visa program on the record?
Yeah, absolutely. It's almost paranoid, I would say. Some people have had better success than others, but universally they seem to have had problems, and at the same time really didn't want to be on the record saying that because they felt like saying anything bad could be a pretense for not getting the workers they need.
Do we know whether any of them, the people who've spoken out against the H-2 program, have been denied visa applicants?
No, like I said, it's sort of this paranoia. One mentioned that she sort of was critical of H-2A in a blog post, and then all of a sudden she didn't get the workers she needed that year.
Michael Hurwitz, what have farmers you speak to say about the H-2 visa program?
The overwhelming majority, it's what they're relying on, and it works for them. They figured out the process. There are delays, certainly. Now, Zaid here has had a nightmare of an experience the last few years. We've written letters of support for him, talking about the highly skilled nature of his employees and of his operation. So it can be a bureaucratic nightmare, but what it does is it lays out the expectations of both the farmer and the farm worker, and our farmers very much like that.
Now, usually when I think of these visas, they're applied to people from Mexico or Central America, but Zaid is bringing people in from Egypt. Does that make things more complicated or easier?
Absolutely. Back in the Bush administration, you could actually bring people from anywhere in the world as long as our embassies would let them come through. Then they changed it to 40 countries that include places like Liechtenstein. There's some very...
How many farm workers are there from Liechtenstein?
There isn't. So it's a political thing, or England. Last year I went to England and I was looking for farm workers in England, and all the farm workers in England are actually from Poland and other Eastern Europe, so it's really a joke, but it's the only system we've got. And it's the only legal system. The problem I have is 10 years ago, I had a person tell me a story about 30 people leaving central Mexico coming to the United States. 50 of them perished along the way. So I didn't want to have anything to do with that. So I pay more money for this, but I'm not going to have people die and me sponsor that kind of stuff.
I imagine England's going through similar problems because of Brexit. My guests are Zaid, who is a farmer. Also, Michael Frank, whose article in The Atlantic is Can America's Farms Survive the Threat of Deportations? And Michael Hurwitz, who's a director of New York City Green Market. This is WMYC, WMYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Michael Frank, did you speak to the U.S. Department of Labor about the H-2 visa program?
Yeah, and I sort of got a polite no comment because labor wasn't, just like so much of the Trump administration, wasn't populated by higher-ups yet. And so they really couldn't comment. The policy is broken, and between the lines, you could hear the frustration even from the people who are still there.
So are they facing a labor shortage?
I think both Michael and Zaid can speak to that more, but certainly the farmers I spoke to have been facing this long before Trump, long before Bush.
Yes, there is a labor shortage, and I like to look at the United States, not just my backyard. I know in our backyard we definitely have a labor shortage. Like California has a monumental labor shortage for various reasons, pot being one of them. Pot is attracting people out of agriculture into that type of agriculture, and that affects us here because people move all over the United States for farm worker jobs.
But you've been competing, I assume, with California and other agricultural states for workers under any circumstances, marijuana or not.
That is true.
Are fewer people coming into the country?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. According to my lawyer, he spends all his time between deportations. It's mostly, and deportations have gone up in the last few
years. Are there raids happening in the Hudson Valley?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, some of the reporting for my story, you find this both anecdotally and in the numbers from ICE, essentially saying the deportations have essentially doubled. Orange County Correctional Facility, where people are held, population's gone way up. So, and even though ICE denied for my story that the deportations were going up, they are going up. Their own records show they're going up.
Haven't immigrants been arrested during ICE check-ins?
Yes, that's happening too, unfortunately.
And that includes people who are green card holders?
There's been people detained that have been green card holders, but I've heard they've mostly been released. But, I mean, just the indignity of that.
Well, and that depends too, because you can have a very minor violation with a green card, and your green card is revoked.
So, how does somebody who's a farm worker wind up with a green card in the first place? That would mean that they're living in the United States year round.
That process is very difficult. It's very unlikely that that person was a farm worker. More likely, some other field.
You profiled a number of farm workers. How did they get into the country, and how did they become farmers in the Hudson Valley?
They walked. They walked from as far as Guatemala, and sometimes, as Zaid was talking, faced really perilous conditions. And then a coyote would come, usually for several thousand dollars, and drive them, oftentimes not necessarily first to the Hudson Valley, maybe to Florida, maybe to New Jersey. Eventually, a friend of a friend of a friend tells them, and then they find out that there's work in the Hudson Valley.
And they travel seasonally, don't they?
I didn't find a lot of that.
Are the people you are hiring, Zaid, coming from other farms in other parts of the country?
No, not at all. My folks have been with me on average now about 10 years. They come from Egypt. They come on a visa. It's seasonal, so they have to go home and come back. I don't have too many. And the local folks that I hire, I try to retain. So I don't have too many people, you know, that transition or go elsewhere. But like, for example, Orange County, I know farmers that hire people that are in Florida in the winter, because in the off season, there's nothing really to do here.
What are the special skills that farm workers from Egypt bring with them?
Well, all of my
farmers. They know how to do cotton, but you don't have cotton upstate.
No. They're vegetable farmers. I mean, Egypt has been doing our high tunnel agriculture, which is basically unheated greenhouses, for about 25 years now, and I have connections in Egypt, professors of agriculture, and actually some relatives. So I went there, spent a lot of time finding the type of people that actually can do the type of work we do, because we grow 1,000 different varieties and it's very complex.
And that speaks directly to what we were talking about before about H-2A. The Labor Department essentially does not understand the difference between skilled and unskilled. So the problem that Zaid and other farmers face is that it's not really quantified. This is a specific skill. This is highly skilled. This person can do this one thing exceedingly well. They're not just pruning trees. They're not just doing what we would presume a farmer does, which is for some reason we think is mindless work. It's not at all.
And that's why our farmers really do rely on the H-2A program, because they want the consistency of their workforce that they have developed relationships with and that they've also invested in their expertise.
So what do farmers do if they're faced with a labor shortage?
Well, some scramble, some plant less. We've seen some farmers change their business model. We had one farmer in Orange County, and this was not due to labor shortages, but really to the incredible cost of labor, an increase in cost of agriculture, shifted to growing really five products and to distill them and build an on-farm distillery. We've seen other farmers, because of the pressures of labor, cut the number of markets that they're coming to, both here in the city and also upstate.
Haven't some of the towns in the Hudson Valley adopted sanctuary city status?
Yeah, in fact, just Monday, Poughkeepsie was the latest town to follow Eric Schneiderman's essentially outline in order to do this. So Schneiderman put this out the day before Trump was inaugurated, and he said, for any city that wants to do this, not just pass a proclamation, but actually pass a legal framework that says, if the police pull you over for some reason, are talking to you, they cannot ask about your status. And he used, very interestingly, he used a Supreme Court ruling from 2013 to create this document. And that basically said that Arizona had the right to ask for people's papers. And Schneiderman basically said, you also have the right not to ask for people's papers.
What do the police officers in these towns say about all of this?
Depends on the police officer you talk to.
Are they these places where undocumented immigrants can obtain IDs and driver's licenses?
Driver's licenses, no, and this is incredibly controversial.
You would want somebody to be able to drive if he's working on your farm, wouldn't you, Zane?
Yes. In our case, I mean, we're a small community, so our guys actually have international driver's licenses, and we have spoke to our local. We're known in our community. We're a small community. You know, everybody knows who we are, so they're able to drive within a certain radius, but that's not the case. It all depends on the county and people, how they interpret the law on those issues. So we haven't had any issues, but they don't drive long distance, usually 50 miles at the most.
Yeah, and there's some concern here that if you get a driver's license, then potentially ICE can track you more readily. And so there's some concern here. Some states actually allow undocumented workers to have driver's licenses, like California. But now there's some fear that ICE is using that data to find out where undocumented workers actually are. So this is really a deep concern.
In New York,
so it sounds like paranoia is running deep in this area.
It is, because nobody knows what actually is going to happen. Now, there is a silver lining. Our president actually uses the H-2A program. So I don't know exactly what that means. You know, the rhetoric cuts both ways. We don't want people coming in because they're taking American workers.
You mean he's used them in his hotels and other ventures?
No. H-2A is specifically for agriculture. So he has I believe it's a vineyard, and I can't remember what state.
Virginia.
It's in Virginia.
It's in Virginia. Right. You can go online. This is all public information. So he uses the program, so hopefully he will understand what that means.
I'm speaking with Zaid, who is a farmer in the Hudson Valley, with Michael Frank, whose article in The Atlantic, Can America's Farms Survive the Threat of Deportations? And Michael Hurwitz, a director at a New York City Green Market. We'll continue our conversation after this. And we are back with Michael Frank, whose article in the current issue of The Atlantic is Can America's Farms Survive the Threat of Deportations? Michael Hurwitz, a director at New York City Green Markets, and Zaid, one of the organic farmers who supplies food to New York City Green Markets. Many people who support President Trump's immigration stance say that undocumented workers are taking jobs away from American citizens. Have the farmers tried to hire American citizens for this kind of work?
Yeah, well, every farmer I talked to said they always do. In part, H-2A, you have to document that you can't find American workers. And usually, pretty much in every case, every farmer I spoke to said, yeah, I've hired Americans. They don't stick around. Or they work for a little while and they find the work is incredibly hard. Zaid and I were talking about this before. You should quantify this further.
Sure. It's we have American workers that work on our farm, but the majority of them have been with us for years, can tolerate the conditions of working on a farm. Working on a farm is very labor intensive, especially labor farms. And you have to like working in hot conditions, cold conditions, it rains, whatever. I'll give you an example. A few years ago, a guy showed up before the H-2A people were able to come, and I hired him to do a very simple task, which is basically put peat moss in a tray and cover it. He lasted all of half an hour, walked away, never came back. And this is the problem.
And what was the problem? It was just
we don't know. We have no idea what was the problem. He just walked away. We have a lot of that. They walk away. They never show up. You know, halfway into the day, oh, I'm going to lunch, and you never see them again. That's a huge, huge issue.
Well, how did the immigrants feel about the fact that they're being recruited to do work Americans don't want to do? And then are at greater risk for deportation?
Well, it sort of depends, right? There's two classes here. There's H-2A and there's undocumented. Undocumented workers I talk to really are proud of the work. They're just, to a person, proud of the work. And, you know, one of the people who I quote says, you know, I understand. If you could work at Walmart, why would you want to do this work? This work is hard. But they're very proud of what they're doing, and they feel like it's interestingly contributing to the American dream.
You know, it's not just farm laborers that are having a hard time employing.
Yes.
We're seeing it's very difficult to find anybody that wants to get involved in agriculture. We have a new farmer program where we're trying to train beginning farmers. This is the hardest profession that I've ever come across. You don't control the weather. You don't control the cost of production. It is physically grueling work. And so it's not just a shortage of farm laborers. We're also seeing a shortage of people that want to go into farming at all.
And you mentioned the weather. This year we've had some pretty crazy weather. Last year we had such weird weather that all of the pit fruits in the Hudson Valley, those trees just didn't bear fruit. You get warm weather and then suddenly cold weather. What has that meant for your crop, Zane?
We are a bit more sophisticated than the average farm. We have 10 acres of high tunnels. So when it's raining hard, all our guys duck into the high tunnels and they can plant in there and work in there. And we've employed a lot of technologies that are relatively expensive but also enable us to do things. We just, my guys are highly skilled. We go the extra mile. We do what's called mudding in. Most farmers don't want to do that because I got to make payroll. I don't have a choice. We got to plant, we got to harvest, because you know my payroll is in excess of $24,000, $25,000 a week. I'm not going to generate that by sitting on our laurels and hoping that we plant a crop. So we got to do it. And the guys understand that. Just a tangent, in Chenango County, we have one of the largest dairy producers, Chobani. They go 50-mile radius. They have to go 50 miles to hire people. They've actually moved a lot of their operations
out. To
make yogurt. Yeah. So those are, you know, not, I'm not going to say they're not skilled jobs at all.
They're incredibly hard jobs. They work 12 hours a day, 6 days a week.
So, there's no labor. There really isn't labor to even bring people.
Leonard, to your point on weather, there will be no New York apricots again this year. It's the second year in a row.
Will we have peaches this year?
There will be peaches. There will be other stone fruit. Most of the cherries fell off the tree. They were growing beautifully. It was a beautiful crop. But because of all the cloud cover and then a little bit of rain, those cherries just dropped. Certainly, we have farmers that are in from New Jersey that have some of those products, certainly not the apricots. It is a bumper crop for apples, thank God. But the weather events and the lack of consistency and clarity and being able to plan is the new reality. And with the issues around labor, just exacerbate that unknown.
And then aren't there problems for organic farmers in general because some of the rules that seem to apply to them aren't applied to the big ag farmers?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, the organic farmers tend to be smaller farmers. I'm relatively large, okay, for a reason. Smaller farmers do something on the labor front where they can get in trouble. You know, they hire these interns and so on and so forth, and they do that for a reason. They cannot afford, okay? They're in violation of all kinds of labor laws, but the businesses, the margins are so cutthroat that what do you do, okay? And there's a lot of people that want to go organic, and that's the reality. It's an expensive business to get into, and you're competing with stuff from China. And so what do? So you cut corners, and that's one of them. That's part of the reason, but it doesn't matter. I mean, we can't pay $30 an hour. And even if you offer $30 an hour, that doesn't mean you're going to get a class of skilled people because they don't exist. We're only less than 0.5% of the population anymore. There's not people doing the kind of work that we do. And I'm in a county where it's pretty much all dairy. And dairy farming is highly mechanized compared to ours. And so there's no, you can't transfer most of the skills from a dairy farm to a vegetable farm.
Michael Hurwitz, a caller asked if there are youth service programs that can bring young people into farming.
There are. Certainly in the country, there's the 4-H programs and Future Farmers of America, and those are active. Here in New York City, there are a number of youth programs. There are some Harlem Grown, Harlem Seeds, East New York Farms. There's Added Value in Red Hook. But again, I ran a youth-run farm stand, or youth farm program. And on our first day, we would have 20 kids, and we would have them move a three-ton pile of horse manure. So the second, after lunch, we'd have 15 come back.
I can appreciate that.
And the next day, we'd have our 12 kids, and that's who we would work with for the season. It's hard work. And then when you factor in the cost of doing business and getting involved in agriculture, It's a great challenge. So yes, there are some great youth programs around there. It doesn't always translate into the creation of the next generation of farmers.
Now, Zaid mentioned that he has a pretty big payroll, but several people in the audience have asked about pay. How does farm labor usually, how much does it usually pay? We're talking about above minimum wage?
Yeah, we're talking $11 to $13 an hour. And you have to also understand,
but barely above minimum wage.
Barely above minimum wage, but you also have to understand that there's some aspects of this that sort of come out of H2A's genesis, which is in most cases people are housed on the farm, so they have housing for free. Mm-hmm. Every farm I visited, they all had cable TV, they had internet, obviously hot and cold running water, little kitchenettes. So there's some subsidy here that you might pencil out to more like $20 an hour because they're not paying for lodging.
Well, the people who have been deported on recently, people who have been charged with crimes or misdemeanors?
Yes and no. So this is also part of what's happening with ICE. Pretty much any pretense can be a crime. In some cases, the people I talk about in my story specifically had DUIs. But that's not always the case, and if you actually look at ICE records, it's often anything, a pull over for a minor traffic infraction.
So, Zaid, if you were hiring somebody, would you have to worry about those kinds of things, I mean, beyond whether a person has documents or not?
I'm fortunate. I've chosen to go the 100% legal route for a long time for the reason I mentioned before in terms of coyotes and all that. So I don't live in fear of an ICE raid. Now, the only thing I do, that there was some instances, and I have my guys carry all their documents with them. If they see a brown person, I hate to put it that way, they take them in. They've been locked up for 2 weeks until they prove that they have the proper documentation. Well, 2 weeks will ruin my farm. Mm-hmm. So that's my only fear. But in general, we're good.
Michael Hurwitz, are we seeing this reflected in the amount of produce that's coming into the city? This must have had an impact on restaurants as well as the people who buy at green markets.
We at Green Market are not seeing the impacts directly of ICE raids and deportations. It is the same volume of product. Again, our farmers really rely on their own labor on the H2A program. It's the general labor shortages that we've seen over the years that are the greatest impact.
To perspective, H2A across the country is not even, I don't think, 5%. Okay, so H2A is not utilized partially because of the bureaucracy, but the other thing is it costs you more to hire an H2A person.
And a listener wonders whether undocumented workers have the same long-term relationship with farms that H-2A visa workers do.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of the reasons why, even though they're getting older and you're seeing this demographic shift, it's one of the reasons why some of these farms still rely on their undocumented workers because, for one thing, in the apple industry, they pack apples. After apples have been picked, they're put in cold storage, and when a grocery chain wants apples, then they're shipped. They're not warehoused somewhere near the grocery store. So that actually means they need labor all year round, just like the dairy industry in New York needs labor all year round. So if you need workers all year round, H2A is only quote-unquote seasonal workers. So you need those people. Who are those people? Those people are undocumented.
There haven't been any explicit changes in our immigration laws. Does that mean that many of these farms are breaking labor laws already on the books?
There's a lot of don't ask, don't tell going on here.
And what happens if a farmer is caught hiring undocumented immigrants? Are they punished?
They can be. It's just incredibly rare. But yes, of course they can be. It's just that's really not very much enforced. It's mostly basically deporting the people themselves.
If you enforce that, our farms would be idle. You cannot enforce those rules. There is the E-Verify program that farmers don't have to use. I mean, the politicians are smarter than we give them credit for sometimes. They know the reality. A lot of them know the reality. We need the American public to understand the true reality of what farming is.
The American Farm Bureau issued a report, and what their numbers are nationally, is that if we were to close the border, there would be a 27% reduction in meat production, a 31% reduction in vegetable production, and a 61% reduction in fruit production nationally affecting us to $30 to $60 billion.
Yeah, and the Center for American Progress, I have this number here as well, said annually New York State that would cost us $40 billion.
Well, so much of this is centered around discussions about Donald Trump, but deportations went up dramatically in the second term of the Obama administration. He was called a deporter in chief. Was there a sense among farm workers in the Hudson Valley that that was happening only elsewhere, Father West?
No, there was a sense amongst the farm workers, but I think what the Trump administration did is woke the rest of us up. And you have the Farm Bureau calling for the expansion of a national guest worker program. That includes people who have been here. I think calling to protect people who are feeding us is the one good thing that has come out of the rhetoric of the Trump administration.
Now, we've talked a bit about how difficult farming is. With that in mind, Zaid, you're a smart guy. Why did you get into farming?
I kick myself, Leonard, every day. Some days, I mean, it's a very good question. I have passion. I mean, when I was young, I wanted to be either an engineer, following the footsteps of my brothers and my father, or in agriculture. And for a thing of fate, I went into agriculture. I love what I do. But I'll tell you what, if this continues, and we do things that nobody else can do, and you know we're cutting edge. I work with Cornell on all kinds of projects. But if things stay this way, why? I can go get a job making a heck of a lot more money. It's only the passion that keeps a lot of us doing what we're doing.
Yeah, and a lot of the farmers I talked to spoke that way too. Really, really with incredible pride. It's a craft. And that's the pride that they have and they express in the work. Once something happens in the ground and you have this miracle of a tomato come forth that we all love when we go to the farmer's market and see this awesome heirloom tomato, that's their pride and joy. And that's the way they spoke to me. Every single person spoke to me that way.
But they're not feeling discouraged at the same time?
Yes, but such is life, yeah.
I think all of our farmers are feeling rather overwhelmed by the outside pressures that they face, but love what they do, and it's why they got into the profession.
Thank you all so much for being on our show. It's been a great pleasure talking with you. Michael Hurwitz is director at New York City Green Market. Zaid is one of the farmers who feeds us. And Michael Frank wrote an article for the current issue of The Atlantic called, Can America's Farms Survive the Threat of Deportations?